Right now, lately, recently, I have been listening to an amazing podcast. I mean, it's been phenomenal, fantastic. You guys know of the story of Jim Jones. Jim Jones was a cult leader that was in charge when the 900 plus people died in 1978. I ain't gonna tell you how old I was. However, because they were drinking Flavor-Aid, by the way, I found that out because I was listening to the podcast. It was Flavor-Aid. Well, this podcast right here explores the truth about victims of the Jonestown Massacre. The host is Amanda Knox. She goes beyond the headlines and the snap judgments as she has her own unique perspective when it comes to the justice system. She joins me now. Amanda, means the world that you join me. Thank you. How are you?
Aww, thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
It's great to be back here talking to you.
No doubt. Thank you for coming back. I got it. Let's get right into it. I just recently saw some stuff on the Jonestown Massacre and a lot of true crimes I'm really into. Why choose this project right here?
Well, yes, what you were seeing was the news for the 40th anniversary. It's been 40 years, and there was a big reunion among the survivors. Came together to celebrate the lives of the people of the People's Temple. I was brought into this project actually by Sundance. They had done a documentary, and they asked me to host a podcast series where I would have the opportunity to speak with survivors. And I was really, really drawn in by this project because what occurred to me was I had never heard about this story except, you know, the Kool-Aid jokes. And the idea of talking to survivors and being able to get a glimpse into the real humanity beyond this, like, easy, stereotypical portrayal of human beings who had been through a tragedy really drew me in. And I was blown away. I really was.
Now, in listening to your podcast, I'm all caught up in everything. There's a lot of things that I got to learn so far. And I even watched the 40th anniversary deal, but I did not. For some reason, I must have missed me. I didn't know he was from Indianapolis. I didn't know how he felt about integration. I didn't know that one time that he's like, hey, I choose not to get help at a hospital because they didn't allow blacks there. I didn't know any of those things. Mm-hmm. In doing this podcast, what are some of the things that stand out to you that you learned that you were like, wow, about?
Oh, my God. Wow. There were many things. One is that there's this piecemeal portrayal of Jim Jones as this, like, demagogue who murdered over 900 people. And that was an oversimplified version of him. Like, there was a reason why so many intelligent and compassionate human beings gave up so much of their lives in order to follow him, because he set an example. And I think the most shocking moment for me when I was interviewing various survivors of the People's Temple or people who had known Jim Jones personally was when I spoke to one of his old mentors from back in Indiana, who was this pastor. And when I asked him about this issue of, well, do we say that a person who committed such this terrible crime, is he a monster, or do we have to look at him as his full human self as he existed throughout time? And I was expecting, you know, the pastor to say, well, you know, the story is more complicated, because, you know, that's one of the true things about life. The story is generally more complicated than it's portrayed. His response was even a step further than that, though. He said that Jim Jones had no choice but to orchestrate this mass suicide because the world around him was refusing to allow his vision of reality to take place. And I still to this day didn't even, like, I don't know what, like, I sat there and I was like, wow, I don't agree with you, but
right.
That's very interesting that
right,
you say
right.
that.
You know, yes, no doubt about it. I know you're sitting there like I'm listening, like, oh, jaw dropped, okay.
Uh-huh.
But that's one of the things that, at least for me, that I took out of it. And I had just, I'd shared something earlier in the 7 o'clock hour with Drew. And you had mentioned this, and you said you had heard it from someone, but I assumed that you had heard it from Brian Stevenson from the book Just Mercy.
He's
right?
One of my heroes.
Yes, when he talks about the fact that are you better than your worst moment, right? And
yeah.
in this case of Jim Jones is he had a beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, Jim Jones, if you find out about Jim Jones then, he was a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But usually power, drugs, and things can kind of sway you going forward and everything. You talk to his son, Jim Jones
Jr.,
who, by the way, that story, he adopted a black child, and he wanted his black child to be Jim Jones Jr. so he could show everyone.
Yeah.
What was Jim Jones Jr. like?
Oh, my gosh. I had the best connection with Jim Jones Jr. We hit it off immediately. It was like we were two hens in, you know, the little hen house, just like cackling to each other. It was great. He was so sweet. And I think I was really struck by the complex emotional place that he was in. He clearly, you know, 40 years have gone by. He was given, I mean, he was the first black boy to ever be adopted by a white family in Indiana. Mm-hmm. That was just not done. He was given a better life than he would have otherwise had. And yet when he was 19 years old, his dad sent him a radio, a radio transmission saying, "Okay, son, it's time to kill yourself now for the cause. So do that."
Mm-hmm.
And he had the courage to not only tell his father no, but also to spend the rest, like the next days, calling all the other People's Temple locations, trying to convince these other People's Temple locations who had received the radio transmission to not kill themselves. He spent those next days knowing that, like, his family members were dying, like, trying to save people's lives. Like, he is a hero. And he carries his father's name, and he carries his father's legacy alongside him. And I had never heard of Jim Jones Jr.'s story.
Neither have I. As a matter of fact, I just found out, let me be honest with you, on Sunday that Jim Jones Jr. existed.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're joined here by Amanda Knox. She is does the podcast for The Truth About True Crime, talking about the Jones Massacre. And, you know, hearing you do this and hearing you go through the stories and the conversations and going through the tabloids, and considering that in October of this year marked 7 years that you walked away from prison in a time where most people's opinions of you and your situation usually weren't theirs. It usually came from the tabloids or it came from their friend. More often than not, most people's opinion on situations don't come from the court documents themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you walked away and you celebrate 7 years and you're doing this story and everything, how does it help you continue forward?
Oh, I didn't know that it would help me so much. It helps me feel less alone. I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this before, G, but when I first came home from all of this, I really did not want this to have been my life. It seemed like this random thing that had just happened to me and fallen upon me, and it didn't feel like it belonged to me, that I had anything to do with it or deserved what I had been given. And I fought back against it a long time about, I am this wrongfully convicted person who now goes through the world as an exoneree. Like, what do I do with that information? It's not something that I did or built or put into the world. And I struggled for a long time to understand what it meant to me and what it meant my role was in the world. And what I came away with was my acute sensitivity to the way that human beings tend to get lost in the stories. I get into debates and even heated debates with a lot of people that I care about when I see that there's been an easy judgment laid down on someone who happens to be in the headlines. And when it came to Jim Jones and the People's Temple, the people who survived the massacre and those who didn't, something that I saw when I started asking people about it. I said, hey, I'm going to be talking to survivors. What I heard back was, oh, I don't know how people could ever do that. They murdered themselves. They murdered their children. They're not like us. They're not people like us. Jim Jones isn't a person like us. They're different kinds of people. And I think that that's an easy answer. The answer that, you know, there are people who are a part of crazy crime stories, and then there are the rest of us. And me, I'm just one of those, the rest of us, who ended up in a crazy, tragic, true crime story. And, oh, wow, that gave me the insight that we're all potentially that person in that story. And it made me think that if we are turning ourselves off to the experiences and perspectives of those who are going through those tragedies or have survived them, then we're losing a tragic knowledge about ourselves. And it's made me, you know, for myself, I'm reaching out to those people to try to get answers. And if other people want to listen, I'm grateful.
Right. So. And I think it would be much easier and probably more convenient for a lot of people to just look at somebody like Jim Jones and say, that person is different from me. I will never know or share any common traits with a person like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I wonder if these days, because I'm sure people do have conversations where they're like, that sort of thing would never happen these days. When you think about just kind of the idea of a cult, you think about this idea of people going to one place. But if you introduce something like the internet and allow people to kind of spread out, just because they're not gathering in one place doesn't mean they haven't found a community that could be just as entrenching as going somewhere physically.
Right, and a cult doesn't have to be under the name of religion either.
Right.
There's ideological cults. And interestingly enough, Jim Jones, yes, he was a kind of religious leader, but really his religion was socialism. Mm. And he you know, practiced what he preached. And he, you know, gave up. He sacrificed so much of himself. And he was not asking of his followers anything that he wouldn't ask of himself. He then kind of went off the deep end. But, you know, like, you don't have to be a religious leader to be a cult leader. You can be a politician, say.
Yes, very true about that. Well, we got about 30 seconds. And 30 seconds, by the way, the truth about true crime is part of the Sundance TV. It's an awesome podcast. You can go to your normal podcast. You can go right to it. You can find it. It is amazing. Before I let you go, congratulations. Your engagement. Talk about that really quick. Come on now. Amanda Knox is engaged.
Thank you. I am so excited. I'm still a little bit flabbergasted that I feel so lucky. I honestly feel bad for everyone else because I have the best partner ever and he gives me the best presents ever. Mm. And we keep upping the stakes. It all started when for his first birthday when we were dating, I set up this whole like LARPing adventure where I gave him like the cyber outfit and we all like, he had to battle like cyber warriors in like real time up on Cap Hill. And from then on out, it's been like birthdays, Christmas, just upping the stakes. And then it culminated in this crash in Meteorland.
Okay, who's the ultimate topper, though?
I mean, he had a meteorite crash into my backyard.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I ain't gonna lie. He is pretty cool. Trust me. And I love the way. But for those who know that G. Scott loves fashion, he loves fashion, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
Amanda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.